Chapter 7. The next day found them both in the spacious indoor practice yard, Raylan Kaur boasted. A few permanent mage lights hung from the vaulted ceilings, and wooden swords and blunted steel ones lined the walls. The thick pile of rushes had been well trod, and here and there one might encounter bloodstains. That day their topic was mage blades, and the man who taught the subject was a master of the art of magical swordplay, Master Renando of Cormyr. Master Renando was a slender man with dark hair and a sharply cut imperial beard, and he looked, at first glance, more like a coin brother or a shoemaker than a war mage. But Rondal knew Renando was an acknowledged master war mage, and one of the best swordsmen in or out of the trade. He considered it a privilege to learn from him, and found a spot near to him on the man's left. Tyndall filed in late and went to the right. Master Renando shot Tyndall an irritated glance, but did not comment. The master of the mage blade sat utterly still on a stool in front of a wall, upon which were hung several swords. He addressed the students in a loud, clear voice, with a manner and Cormyran accent that seemed perpetually amused.
"A sword," he began, "is a blade, a sharpened edge used to puncture or slash. Within that definition, ladies and gentlemen," he said, rising smoothly, "there are hundreds, if not thousands, of variations. Length, width, shape, material. A sword can be made out of copper, bronze, iron, steel, or metals more exotic. It can be whittled out of bone or chipped out of stone. It can be straight, curved, pointed, blunted, one-sided, two-sided, one-handed, two-handed, heavy, light, pretty, ugly, mundane, or magical. But at the core, a blade is a sharpened edge, swung with force, sufficient to cut the intended target, or block a cut meant for you. For a sword is not merely an offensive weapon, as a bow or an arbalest, or even most wands. A sword is an offensive and defensive weapon. It can prevent harm, as well as inflict it. More, it is a tool whose primary purpose is violent, but which can be employed in non-violent ways by those skilled in its use." He walked over to the wall and began gesturing to weapons, naming them as he did. He began with one Rondal had become intimately familiar with in the Mysteries. "First, we have the short infantry sword. This example is from the barbarians on the steppes, a horse-loving people. Yet the first weapon a boy is given in manhood is an infantry sword. The idea is that a warrior's first duty is to protect his village or encampment from enemies, a defensive role. For this, he was given a blade no longer than his arm, double-edged with a point. With it, he could stand and fight toe to toe with any who invaded. Across the centuries, the short infantry sword has proven the most efficient of weapons." He crossed to the next example, familiar by sight but not use. Rondal was an unenthusiastic horseman at best. "When a man climbs on horseback, he seeks to extend his reach, and therefore extends his blade. The double-sided cavalry longsword, as favoured by the Narasi cavalry in this day and age, is a highly effective way of projecting force against the heads of your foes. Combined with the lance and shield, it makes heavy cavalry virtually invulnerable. Combined with bow and axe, it makes light cavalry extremely effective. The cavalry of the Farisi, such as they were, used a curved version of the sword, which actually provides greater cutting leverage." He turned to face them, as he stood in front of another example Rondal was familiar with. "What, then, of the mage blade?" he asked. "Longer than an infantry blade, shorter than a cavalry blade, not much guard to speak of in most cases, a hilt long enough for two hands, but a blade that needs but one to lift it. It was crafted originally by the great Magi of Lost Berwyn, who sought to give it what neither the cavalry blade nor the infantry sword possessed. Versatility." He took the blade off the wall and turned to show it to them, holding it up in profile. "The mage blade is not designed to decapitate from horseback, but it can. Nor is it made exclusively to defend on foot, but it is well suited for that purpose. The ideal mage blade was forged from the finest steel and enchanted throughout the process, to build, for the war mage, the perfect extension of his arm and his talent, the perfect tool for killing, the perfect vessel for wielding magic. He pulled the sword suddenly to guard, and then saluted. The mage blade is not merely a blade. It is also, in its way, a wand. It can direct magical force, convey magical power, and respond to arcane command, once properly enchanted. The steel is strong enough to keep it from snapping, and when it is finished, the spells improving its strength also allow it to be used in a variety of ways. As a ladder, to get over a wall, he said, leaning the sword up against the bench and then using its guard as a step. As a balance, he said, using his feet to shift his weight on the sword until it was balanced perfectly over the bench, his slender slippers on hilt and point. As a lever, he said, shifting his feet again, which shot the sword upward. He caught it deftly in one hand just as his feet hit the floor. The mage blade is not merely a tool of war. It is a tool of magic. But the ones we're issuing you lot, he added, are crappy, rusty old practice pieces with nary a spell upon them. Because long before you learn to use the powers and versatility of the mage blade's full arcane potential, you're going to learn how to use it as a sword. Just a sword. But the right kind of sword. For just about anything. Rondol looked at his new mage blade, a cold steel, blunted sword that had seen hundreds of sparring matches. He had his real mage blade, of course, a serviceable but simple sword, a gift from Master Minolin, back in his quarters, but he was forbidden to use it. Not that it would have given him much advantage. It had only a few basic enchantments on it, but it was a real mage blade, not a practice blade. Feel the grip in your hands, the master urged. Feel the lengthened balance of the sword. A master war mage knows his mage blade better than his pecker. Just to ensure that you do understand the depth of that knowledge, one of the first spells I'm going to teach you is known in the trade as the Bladderlaw spell, or more properly, Gertha's Exploration. In this meditation, you will extend your consciousness into the steel of your blade and get to know it, layer by layer, inch by inch, until you know it the way your tongue knows the back of your teeth. Let's begin. Rondol threw himself into the meditation without much native enthusiasm, but he knew how to study a spell. Under Master Renando's patient instruction, he, along with the rest of his troop, crawled through their blades, mentally speaking, from hilt to point. Rondol could tell his particular sword had been broken and mended twice, and was particularly strong along the fort of the blade. It was balanced, too, blade heavily in his hand, and the leather that wrapped the hilt was soaked with the sweat of dozens of other students. "Once you know the blade," Master Renando continued, when they had completed the two-hour-long meditation, "then you can begin to understand how to use it. And using it in combat is different than other sorts of swordplay. So you will learn the basic postures and positions our tradition brings us. The sword dance of the Magi." They spent the rest of the afternoon learning the rudiments of the positions and the transitions. Thanks to Master Minolin's insistence, Rondol was already fairly familiar with the sword dance, up to the first 8 movements. Master Renando complimented him on his stance when he came by, even. When the time came to pair off with sparring partners, Rondol made certain that he found Gurrendor before Tyndall found him. No need for another awkward confrontation. They hacked at each other in slow motion as Master Renando instructed the class in swordplay at half speed. He almost forgot his fellow apprentice was there until the last few minutes of the class, when the master instructed everyone to switch partners. Tyndall tried to get Rondol, he saw, but Rondol was able to snag a short, hairy Remiran instead. "That was a lot of fun," Gurrendor said as the class broke up. "A lot more fun than infantry drills." It's a whole different style, agreed Rondel, who had not minded learning shield work. Few war magi used shields. Fighting with a mage blade makes you a lot more vulnerable, but a lot more deadly, Gurrendor countered. Once you add in the spell work... Uh-oh, the haystack is heading this way, Stryker. The haystack was what Gurrendor had taken to calling Tyndall, after the shaggy mop on his head that seemed to turn brighter and more golden every day. You want a quick bout, Ron? He asked invitingly, as if it was a privilege. I'm done for the day, he answered coolly. You should be able to find a pick-up match, though. All right, Tyndall said, though he didn't look intrigued by the prospect. Is something wrong? What do you mean? Rondel asked as he folded his equipment. You know damn well what I mean, Tyndall said in a low voice. Rondel looked around. He didn't want to make a scene. What are you talking about? He demanded of Tyndall, mind to mind. You've been acting strange since I got here, Tyndall accused. In what way? Why, well, you aren't being your old friendly self, Tyndall began. You mean I'm standing up for myself and not taking your abuse? What abuse? Tyndall asked. I've been nothing but nice. Rondel didn't have an answer for that. Tyndall had been nothing but nice, in a condescending and arrogant way. He decided to try another approach. Do you really think that what happened at Inarion I'm just going to what? Tyndall asked. And a lot happened at Inarion for both of us. You know damn well what I mean, Rondel replied hotly. You mean Astasia? Of course I mean Astasia. Or were you worried I was pissed over your examinations? What about Astasia? It was a tragic misadventure. Caffin will get what's coming to him. I'll see to that. You'll see to that? That's mighty gracious of you, fixing my mistake, Rondel blasted back, and then walked away hurriedly. Ron, wait, Tyndall said aloud. What mistake? Wait. That's enough, Gurrendor said evenly, stepping between Tyndall and his squadmate. Let him be. He's obviously not. You have no idea what he's thinking, snarled Tyndall, trying to break free. Gurrendor pushed back just enough to show Tyndall he wasn't going to chase after Rondel without getting through him. Rondel stomped down to the main hall, where people were beginning to gather for the evening meal. What was that all about? Gurrendor asked, concerned. I thought you were going to draw on him. That's why I left, Rondel said, disgusted. He doesn't even... No, don't trouble yourself, he sighed in resignation. If he's going to be as thick as an anvil, I'm not going to worry about it. Let's just eat, and then find a bottle someplace. I suddenly feel the need for a drink. Gurrendor grinned. We can go into the village, to the inn, tonight. A few pints will make you feel better. Or make me bawl like a baby, grumbled Rondel. Can he really be that stupid? She's dead, and he blamed me, and now I'm supposed to just pretend like it didn't happen? Let it not trouble you. Gurrendor soothed. You have to work with him. You don't have to like him. True, Rondel sighed. I guess if we could work with Yeetin in the squad, I can work with anyone. The one-eyed barman at the Iron Gate was dealing with 5 tables of customers, but there were plenty empty at this time of day. Rondel paid a penny for 2 pints, poured out of an earthenware jug, and handed one to his squadmate. They talked of the day's lesson, and argued over what the best-designed mage blade would be enchanted with. Rondel had a slight advantage over Gurrendor, as he already had acquired one. It was as sturdy and as functional as the common blades distributed for practice, but it had been made by Master Cormoran in Tudri Town. Rondel had barely added enchantments himself, but now that he understood the process better, he had several he was considering. They were in a debate argument over whether a focus on offensive or defensive spells was more prudent when Tyndall and 2 other magi from the class came in. Gurrendor was immediately on his feet. Sit down, Rondel casually commanded. He's not here for trouble. He's just thirsty. His squadmate took his seat, but never took his eyes off of Tyndall. Tyndall, for his part, spared the 2 a long glance, but then promptly ignored them, focusing instead on his 2 companions and a barmaid. Rondel appreciated his friend's loyalty, but he knew that what was between he and Tyndall
would have to be dealt with alone. If he just wasn't so damned arrogant, he fumed aloud. Has he always been that way? Well, I guess it's been since... Well, since we came to Sevendor. But it's always been there. Headstrong, proud and impulsive, certainly. And then we went to Inarion, and he had to be the biggest dog in the kennel, even as he was failing. Gurrendor shook his head. My father always said that the gods built up such men to make them fall all the harder as an example to the rest of us, he said sagely, and took another sip of the rich ale. He wasn't the one who fell, Rundle said quietly, but bitterly. Eustacia did. That would have solved a lot, actually. And you say this, Caffin of Gaia is to blame? Or Relin Pratt? Oril Pratt's beloved nephew himself, to hear him tell it, Rundle scoffed. Shadow Mage, family trained, and he wants vengeance. On who? On everyone. But Tyndall and I are probably at the top of the list now. We stopped him from stealing a witchstone. Gurrendor looked shocked. Someone tried to steal your witchstone. Someone, Caffin, did steal Tyndall's for a day or so. If we hadn't... Anyway, we retrieved it. But only after Eustacia was thrown from the roof by one of Pratt's mates. I liked her. A lot, he said. Did she like you? Gurrendor asked. Well, not as much as she liked Tyndall, Rundle admitted. As he did so, he recognized part of the burden he'd been carrying. She really liked him, even though we had more in common and I liked her. So, well, Tyndall liked her son, I suppose, but not like I did. So when she died and he blamed you... Oh, Gurrendor said, finally understanding. So he thought it was your fault that the girl you liked died. So did I, agreed Rundle. But to hear it coming from him after all we had been through... Is she stinking Rose? He swore bitterly. He didn't even really like her. I swear he only showed an interest because I did. You think you're angry at him because he blamed you or because she liked him more than you? Gurrendor asked quietly. Rundle wanted to dispute it, violently. If it had been anyone but one of his squadmates, he might have. But Gurrendor wasn't goading him. He was just being a good squadmate, trying to help him out. Probably, he whispered after a long silence. Damn it. Everywhere he goes, he has girls follow him around like they're a bunch of cats and he's covered in cream. And it's only gotten worse since we were knighted, and his head grew 9 sizes too big for his hat. They won't leave him alone. Me? He sighed. I could glow like a mage light, and they'd walk right past me. And Eustacia walked right past you, Gurrendor supplied. In a matter of speaking, agreed Rundle dully, I was the smart one, the educated one. But she only had eyes for that big haystack. Why wasn't she interested in me? He asked, feeling the effect of the ale a bit. Gurrendor sympathetically laid a hand on his arm. There's no accounting for girls' tastes, he said, shaking his head. They say they like one thing when they mean the exact opposite. They expect you to know what they're thinking when they don't even know what they're thinking. Well, I knew what Eustacia was thinking, and it wasn't about me, Rundle said sullenly, draining his tankard. And yes, I was angry about that. I still am. And twice so, because I can't even tell her because I killed her. You did not kill her, Gurrendor insisted. She was pushed off a roof by an enemy. You just made a mistake. A mistake that cost her life, Rundle pointed out. A mistake I should have avoided. But you didn't, and now she's dead, and you can't ask her to the spring dance, Gurrendor said, rolling his eyes. Look, Stryker, I'm sympathetic. I am, he assured him, but unless you want to find a necromancer and have him call up her spirit, I think your chances with this girl are gone. I know, Rundle said angrily. So forget about her, the other mage encouraged. If she liked the haystack more than you, well, that was her error, not yours, or even his, and that had nothing to do with how she died. So think about that while I get the next round, he said, scooping up both mugs. Rundle stared at the fire and brooded, thinking of Eustacia's beautiful face, her shapely figure, her sparkling eyes and her wide smile, and then thinking of it all being reserved for Tyndall's appreciation. It made him burn. Burn at Tyndall for blaming him, and burn at Astasia for being more interested in Tyndall. "Screw 'em both," he muttered to himself. Unfortunately, he said it just as Tyndall was headed to the bar himself to refill the drinks of he and his new friends. "Both?" he asked merrily. "Somehow I don't think you have it in you to even do one," he said, and danced past. Rondol seethed, and without thinking about it, his toe lashed out and caught the tip of Tyndall's heel. The force of the tap was enough to push Tyndall off balance, and then sent him sailing across the public house's wooden floor. The rest of the patrons erupted into unintentional laughter as the boys skidded painfully to a stop. The expression on Tyndall's face, however, was anything but humorous.
"Ish, tits!" he snarled. "You meant to do that!"
Rondol stared at the other boy intently.
"Are you sure?"
"I doubt that I have it in me," he said coolly.
Tyndall bounded to his feet in an instant, and Rondol stood just as fast. Both boys squared off as the crowd suddenly scattered from between them.
"No knives," the barman ordered. "You spill blood, you clean it up."
"I don't need a knife for this,"
Tyndall spat.
"You wouldn't know which end to hold anyway,"
Rondol shot back.
"You want to take this out to the Luck Tree, churl?"
Tyndall drawled in his thickest Alshari accent. Rondol's eyes narrowed. That was a special kind of challenge, back home in Beauval Vale and the rest of the Wilderlands, where nearly every village tavern had a luck tree just outside its door. Fights around them were common, and an invitation to the luck tree was a challenge to a fight. It was how two village men at a public house settled their differences, man to drunken man, under the eyes of the gods, their ancestors and fellow tavern patrons.
"What's a luck tree?" asked Gurrendor, confused.
As it was an Alshari Wilderlands custom, he was unaware of the significance. But there would be no knives, no magic, and no rocks. It was just the two combatants hammering at each other until someone surrendered or they were pulled apart by the crowd. It wasn't a formal challenge to a duel. It was a rustic comeuppance between village men.
"I would be delighted,"
Rondol said, his nostrils flaring and his fists clenched.
"Oh, I'm comfortable here.
Why wait?"
Tyndall said, and leapt at his fellow apprentice with a savage growl. Rondol was prepared for the spring. Tyndall was predictable, even if he was impulsive. Rondol lowered his shoulder and kicked back his right leg, lowering the point until it was in line with Tyndall's midsection. As he made contact, he quickly pivoted and redirected the larger boy's weight. Tyndall went flying, landing on the edge of a trestle table that upended spectacularly, sending crockery and drinks flying. Tyndall struggled to his feet, his face showing signs of the impact.
"Looks like someone thinks he learned to fight,"
he chuckled nastily.
"He'd be right, Haystack,"
Gurrendor said darkly as he took Rondol's flank. The other mage gestured for him to stay back, however.
"This is my quarrel, Snake,"
Rondol murmured.
"You sure you don't need the help?"
Tyndall called, squaring off again.
"Certain,"
agreed Rondol, as the two lunged for each other again, fists flying. Rondol felt the other apprentice's closed fist hammer down on his face and head, and the explosion of pain that resulted with each impact. But his willingness to endure the pain, so minor in comparison to what he'd suffered in the Mysteries, kept him on the offensive. His own fists pounded into Tyndall's midsection as fast as he could manage, and his feet kept him moving forward. Before he knew it, Tyndall had swept one of his legs and sent him sprawling, but Rondol pulled his rival down with him. They fell, still punching and hitting like a couple of drunks at a harvest festival. Rondol found himself in a superior position for too brief a moment. He drove his fist into Tyndall's face as hard as he could, his rage and resentment from all the months being disrespected fueling his fight. For Tyndall's part, the snarl of anger on his face told Rondol that Tyndall was similarly frustrated, which accounted for the blow to Rondol's chin which landed with such force. At some point, the two were dragged away from each other, bruised and bleeding, and hustled off to separate corners of the inn by their compatriots. Rondol watched Tyndall leave, limping in the company of his new friends, as Gurrendor tended his own bleeding scalp.
Tyndall spared him one intense and thoughtful look before he left, then was gone.
That was harsh,
Gurrendur commented as he wiped away blood with an ale-soaked cloth.
Good form, though. Solid delivery.
And solid receipt, Rondal agreed, shaking his spinning head.
He hits hard.
You might want to avoid looking glasses and placid pools for a few days, Gurrendur winced. That's going to give you some lovely bruises.
He had it coming,
Rondal insisted. I think he learned that lesson, Gurrendur nodded.
I didn't see any victorious handsprings on the way out.
Maybe he'll leave me alone now, Rondal groaned, his face beginning to hurt in earnest.
What did he say to you, anyway?
Rondal had a hard time articulating exactly what Tyndall had done. After all, it was a mild enough jibe. He'd traded far worse with his squadmates and not come to blows. With Tyndall, it was different, though. He had been there since the beginning, almost. He had seen, well, more than even Rondal had seen. He was the one in the best place to judge him, and by his actions, that judgment had been, up to now, poor enough. For him to question Rondal's ability, unproven though it might be, in any capacity, got him fighting mad. How dare he? How did his adventures give him any right to criticize? It had felt good to hit back at the boy for his arrogance, his insults, his success, Rondal admitted to himself.
He didn't respect my strength,
Rondal finally answered. He's been strutting around since Timberwatch like he shits gold and his cock makes stallions jealous. Acting like I'm some sort of dorky sidekick. He used a facility with swordplay and an arrogant attitude to try to push me around and... Well, he learned differently today.
I'd say he did, Gurrendur agreed. I'm just glad you didn't draw. That might have been awkward.
It was a matter for the luck tree, Rondal explained, dismissing the concern. Under the luck tree, in the Mindens, you don't use anything but your bare hands. It's not like a formal duel.
What the hell is a luck tree?
Gurrendur repeated. Oh, it's a kind of miniature shrine to Herus or Huin, or even Pram the Blessed, outside of an inn or tavern, he explained. It's usually just a big old dead tree, but sometimes it's a post or a pillar. It's where you go to take a piss, pray for luck, or beat the piss out of someone. That happens a lot, and what happens under the luck tree is not the affair of the reeves or magistrates. But it's not designed to be, well, permanent, he decided. Just a violent settlement of differences.
Good, Gurrendur decided, because if either one of you came at me with an expression like that on your face, I'd fall on my sword.
Did it really get that fierce?
Like a dogfight, Gurrendur nodded. Some of the old veterans were even approving.
Good, Rondal sighed. Maybe I beat some sense into him.
That evening, after the portcullis bell had rung and the gate had shut for the night, Rondal limped back to his room, dreading meeting his fellow apprentice once again. Part of that was guilt from fighting with someone who was supposed to be as a brother to him. Part of that was reluctance to sustain any further damage to his face. As it was, his face was beginning to resemble the inside of a sausage. He opened the heavy wooden door to their mutual chamber and found Tyndall in bed, reading by magelight.
Good evening, he grunted without emotion.
Evening, Rondal replied stiffly. He went immediately to the ceramic basin and poured water from the ewer to bathe his eye. As he was patting it dry, gingerly, with the rough woolen towel, he glanced at Tyndall, whose face nearly glowed in the arcane light.
Ran into a door, I see,
he noted. A very, very heavy door, agreed Tyndall, after a pause.
Clumsy of me.
You should be more careful in the future, Rondal said, after he considered the situation. Doors can be dangerous,
especially when you don't expect them to be. I shall take note for future reference.
That is wise of you. Good night.
Good night.
Tyndall extinguished his mage light, putting the scroll he was reading next to his bed. Rondal stripped and crawled into his own bed. He winced involuntarily as his damaged head brushed his bedding. His roommate took notice.
Try ice, suggested Tyndall. Soak the towel in the water and then freeze it. It numbs the pain and helps the swelling.
Oh, thanks.
Yes, I forgot about that, he admitted.
It took only a few moments to tap into his stone and remove the energy from the water in the towel.
rendering the cloth stiff and cold. His burning face immediately felt better.
"Thanks,"
he repeated as he began to feel drowsy.
"Don't mention it,"
Tyndall dismissed. "It's easily one of the better things about being a mage. Almost makes up for the number of wayward doors," Rundle said dreamily.
"What?"
Tyndall asked, confused.
"Forget about it,"
Rundle insisted. "We have to get up early tomorrow.
Mage blades, remember?"
"Oh, yeah,"
Tyndall recalled.
"That's going to be brutal. What are you going to tell people about your face? Since you've already claimed the aggressive door excuse."
"I had a haystack fall on me,"
Rundle decided. "If they have any questions after that, I'll just look at them in stony silence and dare them to ask."
Haystack?
"That's what we call you behind your back."
"Oh."
Tyndall was quiet for a long time. So long, Rundle thought he might have gone to sleep. Suddenly, an amused chuckle filled the darkness.
"I guess that fits, then."
"I thought so,"
agreed Rundle, grinning to himself in the dark.
"Good night, Haystack."
"Good night, Striker,"
Tyndall added with a snort. Rundle let him live. The next day's lessons began early, and involved learning, coupling the art of the mage blade with the augmentation spells a mage could throw on his own body, altering his perceptions, his reactions, his strength and speed. Crafted for use without witchstones, the spells consumed the significant natural reserves of power most magi managed quickly, allowing them to be employed only for very limited periods of time, usually seconds. Of course, to an augmented war mage, seconds could be as helpful as hours. Such spells also took a toll on the body, to a greater or lesser extent. You could push human muscle fiber to do incredible things, for a while. Then the toxins built up and the exhaustion set in, taxing your efforts, even killing you, if you persisted in using the augmentations past your well-understood limits. But combining a mage blade cunningly employed with the power and speed the combat spells granted made a war mage one of the most deadly foes on the battlefield. Even in short bursts, a war mage could inflict tremendous damage on an enemy. Rundle had done it himself. Not artfully, but he'd done it. You could stab a lot of goblins when you moved thrice as fast as they did. He could also see how quickly the other magi tired when they employed the spells. He had, too, when he had been separated from his stone for the mysteries. Now he summoned power through it, leaving his natural reserves alone. It was still tiring, but not exhausting. Some of the other magi looked like they'd been through a 50-mile march. Rundle wasn't the only one to notice. Master Renando approached him in the afternoon, ignoring his tender face, and asked him how he was faring.
"Well enough, Master," he admitted.
"So I see," the old man nodded. "This is the first I have had experience with high magi, much less high war magi. Knights magi, I believe the popular term is. I wish to conduct an experiment, if you are able."
"What would you like, Master?"
"I would like to see just how long a knight mage can sustain the augmentations through the agency of the Irionite."
"I've done it for 4 or 5 minutes, Master,"
Rundle provided. That provoked a gasp from some of the war magi.
"And a minute is about all most can manage," he nodded. "So let us see the limits of your power."
"Very well, Master,"
Rundle said, used to people poking and prodding him about his abilities.
"Shall I run around the fortress until I drop?"
"I figured a more practical demonstration would be in order. I'd like you to fight, to spar, while augmented, and fight as long as you can."
"Master, I'll do it,"
he said, confused. "But I'll defeat anyone I fight who can't keep up with me."
"Exactly," the swordmaster grinned. "So we'll pair you to your fellow and see which of you drops first."
Rondo's heart hit the floor.
Him? Fight Tyndall?
Tyndall outclassed him as a swordsman any way you looked at it. Longer reach, more strength, faster, better reaction time. Rundle could stand and fight just about anyone else. But Tyndall? Augmented? He groaned.
"I thought you might enjoy it," Master Renando smiled. "I heard about you two dancing at the pub last night. I like to see that kind of energy. Let's see if you can make it useful."
Rundle slowly walked to the centre of the circle, chalked out for demonstrations, trying to loosen up his arms before the contest.
"I'm not any happier about it than you," he heard Tyndall say mind to mind as he entered the ring. He swung his mock mage blade around a few times.
"I'd wager otherwise," Rundle sent back. "Why would it bother you?
Because now they'll all think I'm taking advantage of you after I already beat your face in last night."
"Who beat whose face in?"
Rundle quit worrying about Tyndall's strength, reach, and aptitude. He suddenly wanted to fight him very much.
"Gentlemen," Master Renando said serenely, "prepare your spells. Take your guards. Saluta, and begin."
Rundle felt the effect of the augmentations take hold of his body and mind just before Tyndall did, but he did not attack until he was sure both of them were affected. He didn't want to be seen taking unfair advantage. He didn't have long to wait. Once Tyndall heard the command to begin, he aggressively began his approach. Fighting against another augmented war mage was tricky. In many ways, it was similar to regular sparring. But Rundle's spell worked a little faster, he noted with satisfaction, and therefore his was the first strike to fly. Tyndall neatly caught it on his wooden blade and spun another in response, and for the next several moments they traded parries like their first day of swordplay. Then Tyndall apparently grew weary of the monotony and began varying his attacks. His footwork kept him coming in on three main approaches, Rundle noted, as he did his best to block the flurry of blows. He couldn't fault Tyndall for his footwork. It was flawless, but it also lacked imagination. It was swordplay. It wasn't close combat. That was his advantage, he realized, as he bore the impact of the well-placed blows. Tyndall knew swordplay, and he knew a lot of it. But this wasn't technically swordplay. This was war magic, combat magic. The mage blade was the focus, but it was by no means the only weapon at his disposal. He doubted Tyndall realized that. He was too busy showing off what a good swordsman he was. When Tyndall made his next attack, instead of parrying, Rundle allowed the other boy's momentum to carry him forward a few steps, nearly into the slowly chanting crowd. Rundle turned to strike from behind, only to find Tyndall's mock blade already blocking the blow in anticipation, even as he fell. That was fine, and it confirmed his theory. Rundle would have tried to move out of the way to avoid the strike instead of blocking it. Tyndall was thinking of this as a sword fight. Rundle spun back around, pivoting on his heels and turning his shoulders to snap a second attack at Tyndall's exposed legs. Once again, the haystack twisted and parried an artful block, when he could have just moved an inch and allowed the sword to miss him altogether. It was what his masters in the mysteries had called a failure to appreciate the outcome. Thinking you were in one kind of a fight, working for one goal, when in actuality you were fighting a different way for a different goal than you started with. If he was an adept swordsman, Rundle knew, he would have tried a complex combination of blows, designed to try to push his opponent out of his rhythm and make a mistake. That's what the swordmasters, he'd heard, including Master Renando, usually counseled. But here he was, with a perfectly good opportunity to kick Tyndall in the padded shoulder with his boot. So he did. Rundle had timed it well. Tyndall was slightly off balance and moving in that direction anyway. Rundle's augmented foot pushed against the other boy's shoulder hard. Tyndall skidded to a halt almost 15 feet back. The moment he stopped, he was right back on his feet again, rushing Rundle hard. He had enough sense to avoid a full tackle, which Rundle could have thrown, and instead hammer at him with his blade in increasingly sophisticated ways. And not just his blade. Once Tyndall understood the fight and the goal, he threw himself into it. Rundle was not just blocking sword blows, he was now dodging elbows, knees, and fists. They weren't always well thrown, but any of them had the potential to knock him back if he let them land fully. He had to focus mightily on keeping his body out of the way of Tyndall's onslaught. Tyndall had the initiative, Rundle knew. He had the momentum, and he had sufficient motivation, apparently, to fuel a powerful attack. Rundle found himself merely able to defend for a while. He did an adequate job, prohibiting anything solid from hitting, but he was nowhere close to winning. Then he realized, just by not getting hit,
He was winning. He didn't have to knock Tyndall out. All he had to do was keep Tyndall from knocking him out. If he could patiently keep up the parries, not extend himself recklessly or foolishly, conserve his energies and momentum, and wait for the big haystack to make a mistake. And soon enough, it happened. Tyndall put a little too much power into a chopping, overhand blow. Instead of parrying it, Rondell slipped into the swing, grabbed Tyndall's arm, and threw him over his hip in a move he'd learned in the Mystery's unarmed combat class. Once again, the boy skidded to a stop, and once again he was on his feet and fighting in moments. Only this time it was Rondell advancing, pushing his advantage against the taller boy while he was still rising. He swung his mock blade with a furious motion from the top and sides, and even attempted a quick thrust. Tyndall, frustratingly enough, managed to avoid them all. Soon enough, he was back to pounding away at Rondell's defense and slowly pushing him back across the room. Rondell could see by the look in his eye that he wasn't about to overextend himself again. At least that's what Tyndall was telling himself. Rondell knew his opponent better than just about anyone, and as he kept up his desperate defense against him, he figured that if he gave Tyndall enough bait, he could coax him into making another serious mistake. His opportunity took a while to come, but once again he was ready for it. One of the senior apprentice's blows came in short and underpowered, and Rondell used the chance to push back, hard. The blow was hard enough, in fact, to push the blade out of line. Rondell had a great opening, which Tyndall could have blocked or avoided. Instead, Rondell leaned in and punched Tyndall in the stomach, hard. Hard enough to double him over, and as his practice helmet swam below Rondell's field of vision, he brought the pummel of his practice sword down on it. Tyndall went down like an anvil off a bridge.
"Victor!" Master Renando said, when Rondell dropped the augmentation and could hear properly again. "Well done, lads! That was more than 8 minutes! I've never seen an augmentation held so long before!"
Rondell was panting for breath as he slid his helmet off.
"Can someone check on his head?" he asked, his arms tingling after such effort. "I hit him kind of hard."
Tyndall was fine, of course, but it took a few moments for him to return to consciousness. He rubbed the back of his neck confusedly as he sat on the floor, a war brother tending to his head. It wasn't bleeding, but it was hard to discern under the brilliant bruises he still wore.
"An excellent job, Sir Rondell," murmured Master Valwyn, who had elected to sit in on the class. "It appears you have discovered something, something you needed here at Raylancourt."
"Skill?"
"Strength," corrected the old war mage. "Skill is respectable, but strength is respected, even if you lose. When you arrived here, I was anxious that you would not find that strength in yourself. Once again, I was gratified that the god saw fit to see you through the Mysteries. Many a man has discovered his strength there."
"I am a lot stronger than I was when I got here," he agreed, as he stripped off his padded armor.
"Not just in your body," agreed Master Valwyn. "Your master's letter gave me some hint of your difficulties when it asked for your inclusion in the Mysteries. He told me of your rivalry with Sir Tyndall. He suggested that your greatest deficit lay not with your lack of skill in war, although he did address that, but in your lack of confidence in your own strength. But I didn't beat him because I was strong," he pointed out. "I sucker-punched him."
"You took unorthodox action, which ended the engagement," Master Valwyn corrected, helping him with his armor. "And you wouldn't have done it if you were afraid of him."
"I was never afraid of him," Rondell said viciously. "Weren't you? Not of him personally, but the idea of him. Sir Tyndall, the Golden Warrior. He's handsome, he's tall. His blonde hair flows like water. His shoulders are broad, and so is his smile. He's skilled in swordplay. Even if he lost, he still bears more skill with a blade than you. But you won the bout because you were confident of your own strength, and you stopped being scared of the shadow of the man and confronted the man himself."
I sucker-punched him,"
Rondell repeated, dazed. "Yes, yes, you did," smiled Master Valwyn, "and no doubt part of you thinks he deserved it. Part of your face, in any case."
Yeah,
Rundle grunted, touching the lingering bruises. But I guess I was afraid. But not of him, of his reputation. I've spent so much time trying to measure myself against him that I was working against myself.
Exactly, nodded the old war mage. You have demonstrated your strength. Even if you had lost the contest, you would have demonstrated your strength today.
Thank you, Master,
Rundle said gratefully, once he realized what the man was saying.
I guess I did let my own expectations fight half my battle for me before I even drew my blade.
He looked down at where Tyndall was still being encouraged to sit.
Are we ever going to not want to kill each other?
Valwyn shrugged. Only Duin knows. But regardless of whether or not he'll kill you, or you, he, there is one thing that he will never do again. Disrespect you.
Rundle shook his head, and I had to hit him in the head a lot to get him to realize it.
That's the only way you get a 16-year-old boy to realize anything, laughed Master Valwyn. Rundle, don't dismiss the importance of this lesson, and it isn't about Tyndall. It's about yourself.
Rundle scowled. Shall I prepare myself for a lecture? He asked.
It seems appropriate, Valwyn agreed. The metaphorical scroll in your metaphorical saddlebag you should ride away from Raylancor with is this. Being weak makes you despised. It isn't malice on the part of the strong. It is reaction to the nature of weakness by strength.
I can't seem to understand this metaphorical scroll, Master,
Rundle said tactfully. Let me put it another way, the man said, walking with the young apprentice. Nature, as you know, constantly seeks equilibrium. That means it seeks balance, even in human affairs. You and your fellow apprentice share a burden and a responsibility, but if you share it unequally, that will force the strong one to compensate, overcompensate, in some other area, in order to seek equilibrium. You came here, if not weak, certainly not strong.
I'll never be as strong as him, I fear,
Rundle admitted quietly. You needn't be, Master Valwyn said, leading him to an alcove. You must merely be as strong as you can be. That will be sufficient. Standing up to him like that, after being in the weaker position, you will be tempted to take revenge, or otherwise find redress against him. But he could no more avoid his behavior than the water can avoid filling the mill's wheel. I encourage you not to blame him for it, just as you did not blame another squadron for the theft of your food in the Mysteries. In avoiding that, you found a quicker and more beneficial answer to the problem, one that motivated you all to fill your bellies.
You know about that, Rundle said, embarrassed.
I'm an initiate myself. I sit upon the Initiates' Council, chuckled Valwyn. The officers' mysteries, no less, held in the autumn. Believe me, all of us keep an eye on the young men who make it to the Mysteries. In them we find the leaders of tomorrow, the marshals and knights and commanders who will see our kingdom to future victories. You were one of the favorites, though I should not tell you so. Your special relationship with the spellmonger, of course, merited the observation, but then you displayed enough native talents and determination to draw eyes of your own accord.
That seems unlikely,
sighed Rundle. We did fairly well, but we were hardly a model unit. And that is precisely the point, argued Valwyn. You weren't a model unit, yet you did fairly well, regularly performing ahead of the other units in some key contests. Some you never knew you were competing in. Oh, we watched you carefully, Sir Rundle.
So why wasn't Tyndall invited to the Mysteries? Asked Rundle.
He did not need them. Not yet. Sir Tyndall has much promise on his own, do not mistake me, but it was thought that your talents needed the Mysteries more, for now. Sir Tyndall is bold, brave, forceful, and arrogant. You are cool, calculating, thoughtful, and cautious. Sir Tyndall is adept at improvisation, whereas you see and can execute a plan to its successful conclusion. Sir Tyndall is charismatic and inspiring because of his personality. But you, Sir Rundle, are inspiring because of your competence, and that is far more compelling in a military officer.
How so?
I always thought valour belonged to the bold.
Valour belongs to the winner, countered Valwyn. Valour becomes vain glory when it serves no purpose. Valour in a losing cause might be noble, but it will not be rewarded. As we were discussing your entrance into the mysteries, it was pointed out repeatedly that you have the mind to plan and plot and lead and figure in ways Sir Tyndall never will.
In all fairness, Master Valwyn, Sir Tyndall is not incompetent, Rondell found himself saying. In fact, he can be quite surprising about his competencies, sometimes.
It's not a matter of competence versus incompetence. It's a matter of degrees. Don't mistake me. Sir Tyndall's style of valour is noble, and it makes him a worthy warrior. But if he did not have men of determined character and clear mind to point him at the foe, could he be trusted to find him on his own, or do what needed to be done when he did?
No.
But you think I do?
So we believe.
The War Mage nodded, and believe more strongly now than before.
Because I didn't get myself killed at the mysteries.
Because you went into the mysteries without vocation, and yet passed through them and became initiated as one of the top candidates in your cohort. You went in a boy of average strength and flexible character. You came out harder, stronger, and more resilient than before. You have confidence in how you walk and speak and act now, because you have a better understanding of the outcomes. And once you understand how things are going to turn out, you can act with confidence, and from confidence comes authority.
I don't particularly want authority, protested Rondell.
I didn't particularly want my Rajira when my talent emerged, Valwyn pointed out, but the gods are rarely cooperative with such whims. You will have authority because you are intelligent, talented, and you know how to learn. Most importantly, now you have strength. You will not stand for a weaker force to assail you, and you are willing to test that strength in conflict. Such is the warrior's way. Such is the way of the mysteries, and such is the way of every successful warlord and general in history.
So that confidence is going to make Tyndall respect me? Leave me alone?
Respect you, yes, agreed Valwyn. Leave you alone? Likely not.
Rondell frowned. Why the hell's not? Why does he have to?
You haven't figured it out, chuckled Valwyn. He likes you, boy. Despite your antipathy, he genuinely likes you. More, now that you have shown him your strength, he can admit to liking you and not feel ashamed of the emotion. You have far more in common than you have differences, even taking your different characters into account.
I'm nothing like him,
Rondell said, proudly defiant to the notion. How many other brave, resolute, spellmonger's apprentices from a rustic mountain hamlet currently occupied by goblins do you know? Rondell grimaced.
Give me a moment to think.
You two don't have much family. Not outside your master's household. Your loyalties are the same. Your ages are near enough alike. And your preferences in battle are even well matched.
So why does he have to be such a...
Because he is a 16-year-old boy being forced to do a man's job. And he hasn't mastered the task yet.
Then why do I...
Because you are a 16-year-old boy being forced to do a man's job, and we'll be mindful that you haven't mastered the task yet.
Rondell looked subdued. He still...
Your feuds are destined to be frequent, I have no doubt, and many will stick to memory. But you will overcome them. You can now, because compared to the other things you have overcome, they are minor. Inconsequential. Unless you allow them to be consequential. You are strong now, Rondell. The mysteries gave you purpose, meaning, form and order to build your manhood upon. They open us up to tearing down the men we were and building the men we wish to be. It is a portal to honor, glory, achievement, and most of all, strength. Strength of body, of mind, of character. That's something he can't take away from you. It's part of you. And that is something you have now forced him to respect.
So what if he keeps challenging me, baiting me?
Then you will, once again, have to choose how to respond. And if he needs another lesson in your strength to keep him from despising you, I think you are well prepared for the task.
Rondell was silent for a time,
considering everything that had been said about his fellow. He didn't hate Tyndall exactly, but he still felt wounded about Inarion, and he still resented the younger boys blaming him for it. That still stuck in Rondol's stomach like a bloodworm every time he thought of him, regardless of how reasonable it was to think otherwise. So how do I keep from wanting to stick his head in the nearest convenient bucket and hold it there until he stops wiggling? Rondol asked. You exercise your control. You choose not to. You consider the consequences and plan accordingly. You rise above the petty discomforts of your life and take solace in the pursuit of your goal. So, I should just ignore him when he acts like an idiot? Essentially, yes, Valwyn agreed with a chuckle. I suppose that is exactly what I'm saying. Ignore it until you can't. Then intervene forcefully. He respects you now. He isn't going to do anything to lose that respect without cause. It's a lot to let go of for your own good. I urge you to find a way. Such rivalries take time and energy away from your mission, and they sap your strength when it could be used to more noble purposes. And if I can't, then you have 3 more weeks of intensive training in a wide variety of subjects, many of which will allow you further opportunities to test your strength against your fellow, if you'd like. Are any of them painful or humiliating? Rondol asked, after chewing his lip in thought.
Oh, gods, yes, snorted Valwyn.
Then let's just see how I measure against him, Rondol decided. And if he gets his nose bloodied along the way, well, we can just rationalize it as an opportunity to better himself.
Yes, smiled Master Valwyn indulgently. You do have wit and intelligence. Say, have you ever considered aspiring to the officer's mysteries?